Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at UH1.com. That's UH1.com.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Los Angeles. 102.3 FM Riverside.
And 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Oh, welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, Mr. David Martino. I was going to call you the little hairy name, you know, from the other show.
Yes.
Yeah. Pila. What was that? Pila? Pilo? Pilu?
Oh, Pilu, yeah.
Pilu. Pilo, the little hairy one.
Yes. Wasn't that a type of gum, too?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I've never had a
remembering
gum
something.
Pilu.
I think it was Pilu gum.
But you're into all that pee, aren't you? Oh, disgusting. You're already disgusting.
Oh, it's
the end of the week, and it's shameful. Now, speaking of shameful, we're getting into a horror. And not a whore, a horror writer, book that we talked about, I think a week or so ago, maybe it was 2 weeks ago. It's the Unholy Triquerta, and it's Celtic Fairy Tales, Dark Tide Mysteries and Thrillers, Book 9. Say that quickly 10 times. So one of the authors of one of the stories in there is Jason Parent. So thank you for being here, Jason.
Thank you for having me on.
How did you get roped into this into this book? Now, how do you find yourself get into? Because I've noticed this, you've done quite a few. It seems like anthologies, or you've been part of books with several stories in it and stuff like that. So, how does that happen for you?
Well, I think you got it right when you called me a horror whore.
That's the way I like them.
Well, it's funny. On this story, I was invited to a different Dark Tide anthology, Crystal Lake, that dealt with Halloween. So each of these Dark Tide series has three novellas in them. I was working on the Halloween one, and I don't know, for some reason I felt like writing a Celtic kind of Halloween story. And it didn't really fit with the Halloween motive for that novella, but I really loved the story. So I reached out to Joe, who's the principal over at Crystal Lake, and asked him if I could, if he'd be interested in doing a Celtic version of the Dark Tide series. And he gave me free rein to run with it. That's how this story was born.
Any reason for Celtic in your particular case, or did it just sort of happen?
If you look at my bibliography, I'm all over the place. So I mean, I just like to try everything. I'm interested in all mythologies and Celtic. I would say I prefer writing folk horror and adding themes to it from different you know, different mythologies across the world, and Celtic hadn't been done by me yet, so it's one I wanted to tackle. I have this whole volume of Celtic tales from Flame Tree Publishing that I was reading at the time, and I was getting inspired by it, so I gave it a shot, and I hope the result is enjoyable.
Do you have an easy time with editor invites, you know, coming up with stories and coming up with stories for open calls? I know it takes me forever to come up with something. What about you? How does that work?
Actually, it's the opposite for me. Open calls or invites almost always trigger an idea in my head. And they kind of give me focus. As you might find out during this interview, I kind of have ADD. I'm all over the place. So it gives me kind of, it nails me down to a story and gives me focus and drive to get something done. So the ideas just keep coming. I don't know if you watched The Sandman with that guy, the episode, the guy just kept having ideas pop into his brain. He had to write them down. I'm kind of like that. To the point that it annoys everybody.
That's great. But you always stick to a horror theme, but like it's kind of a darker stories. They're not, and you never go off of that, do you?
Dark, I guess, would be a good word. Usually. Well, no, some of my sci-fi has been, dare I say, philosophical or, yeah, so I write horror, sci-fi, thrillers, and dark comedy, but I mean, I've gone from literary to pulp to funny to abstract. I'm just, like I said, I like to try. The joy of writing for me is to, you know, have a creative outlet that allows me to try new voices, experience new point of views. I mean, obviously, I can't really step into the point of view of a Native American from, you know, the 1400s or something. But I guess it wasn't America back then. But you know what I mean. The effort is what I enjoy.
Yeah, and so when you're doing these, when one of these ideas comes into your mind, and you decide you're going to go with it, How is that experience for you? Is it just the story come to you? Do the voices of the characters come to you? Like what is that process like?
Oh, I'd say it'd be different for novels versus shorter stories. Short stories is almost a plot. Then I figure out what characters I need, and then I breathe life into those characters because I don't want them to be two-dimensional, obviously. But with novels, I have only a beginning and an end, and then I'm really looking at the cast right off the outset. Who do I want to tell this story? What do I want them to say in the story, and how do I get there?
On a novel, you have more room to get to know your characters or to explain them and explain the situations and maybe how they connect with each other. In these shorter stories, you don't have that same space, the same luxury. How do you get that to still come across? Like, you have to use your words and what you put down carefully, I think, right? Because me as a reader in a short story, I have to understand the character and the dilemma and what they're going through and why it matters right away almost.
Well, I think I'm pretty economical in my word choice as it is. I don't like filler. So I don't like reading filler. Like Stephen King is king for a reason, the master. But like I was reading Revival, for example, and he had many, many pages on 60s music. And if you don't have a deep appreciation for 60s music, you kind of lose focus on the novel. Conversely, to give the man his due, The Outsider, the beginning of it was this fast-paced police interview all the suspects in the crime that went down, and it was some of the best writing I've ever read. So I try to stick towards that ladder. active voice, you know, let the characters be developed as the story unfolds. No information dumps, no wasted space.
Do you consider yourself a natural short story writer or a natural novelist? Do you have a preference?
This is going to sound kind of BS too, but I'm in the middle. I actually find long fiction, like the novelette or novella size, perfect for me. Maybe because I find novels have a lot of filler and short stories don't have a lot to tell, a lot of room to tell a bigger story. I mean, a grandiose story or something with more than just a few scenes.
And a lot of people call them short novels too, the novellas. So you're still a novelist.
Well, I have written 10 novels, but I do prefer I think I prefer the stories of the link in this unholy tri-ketro world. Still debating on how to say that, but I prefer that. I think I prefer this length. So I have a few novelettes out there that I kind of sell as chapbooks. Yeah, I think those are some of my stronger stories.
So now in this new book, your story is a knot within a knot. So tell us a little bit about that story. What's the premise of this?
So that image on Unholy Tricatcher is kind of like the Celtic knot. And a knot, it, you know, three-pronged, hence the try. I don't know if that is a very good explanation. But what I try to do is a three-pronged story within a three-author collection. So, again, I was given free reign. So this was like, it was me trying to be absurdly creative, maybe. But it gave me a lot of enjoyment because I was the guy that's tying the stories together. My story has three parts, and they are taken from the point of view of three different characters. But while I'm telling that story, I'm weaving in elements of Willie and Curtis's stories. So I set the premise with the plane in a storm, and it crashes. So it actually breaks apart in the air, and Curtis's story is pretty much the front part of the plane, while mine is my first part is the rear. And we follow a gentleman in the first part that's trying to get home from a conference in Italy back to America, because I know American, that's easy for me to write. Started with that. And his ordeal that goes through the night and into the next day. Then we look back at Curtis's story, which is pretty much the front of the plane the night before. And my second part is the front of the rear of the plane, different character night before as well. So you learn more about the gentleman from a different character's perspective and some of the other characters that you see in the other parts, as well as the characters in the other stories. I'm probably way over explaining that, but essentially it's just an interwoven piece, and I got to be the guy that interweaves the work of some other great writers that, to me, that was just a fantastic experience.
Do you have a point to a story like this? No, I, you know, there's only one point. No, but I mean, at the end, is this just purely entertainment then? Like, do you have a theme or an idea in this story as well or no?
So my goal with every story is always first to tell a great story that people are going to enjoy. Obviously, though, my themes, my politics, although I try to keep them subtle, you know, our biases, they work their way in regardless. With my first part of the story, it's obvious and probably maybe too in your face, but we're taking it from the point of view of a man who's going to survive a plane crash, but then enter this woodland community where he's making assumptions based on what he sees, assumptions that inevitably turn out to be wrong. And the theme is obvious, and how I feel about how we're not accepting of other cultures and other perspectives. And when we make assumptions about them, we're doing them and ourselves a disservice.
Right. So basically a Republican crashes on a plane.
Yeah. I didn't say that, but you did.
That's right. I'm fine. I have no problem saying things.
Well, I'm from Massachusetts, so I mean, I should tell you. I used to be able to say it. I should tell you my politics, but not so much these days.
Well, you know, the honest truth is it's not really about politics. It's just about an idea or a theme, and people have made it political, but it's not that simple. Do you know how you want to end the book when you do something like this?
I knew how I wanted the first part to end, so I needed to read Curtis's story and Willie's story to weave in an end that satisfies all three of those stories. So my third part, which I didn't really discuss, that is the culmination of all three stories. It just wraps it up nicely. So I was very happy with how I was able to do that. Again, I'm patting myself on the back here, but I was pleased with the result.
Has it ever happened where you get kind of in a place where the story isn't going where you want it to go, or when you're working with other writers, they may be perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with them. But I'm just saying that sometimes they might take it somewhere you didn't expect.
Yes. So I was co-authoring a story with somebody, and we just had two different ideas on where it should go. So we stopped. I mean, great authors, one of my best friends in the business, but we're just not a good co-author team. I'm actually working on a script with another friend who I didn't think would go well, but it's actually clicking. So I guess you never know until you give it your best go.
Yeah, we have the author that doesn't like you on the line right now.
There's probably several of those. No.
How does one handle a situation of working with other authors? Like, how is it that you take that process on? Like, if I was to set up with another author now that I think would be good, what's the basic kind of outline that you use when you call someone?
Oh, well, I would have to say I would be the difficult. I'm not for publishers and editors, I am very easy to work with. But if it was somebody that would, I would probably be the difficult co-author if we were working on the same story, because I do like control over the plot and the characters. I'm open to other ideas, and certainly people have great ideas that are far better than mine. But if I'm going to be putting the work in, I want to tell a certain story. So
you're a controlling bitch.
Yeah, I'm a controlling bitch, yes.
Well, speaking of other authors, how did you find the horror community? I know I found them on the old Shocklines forum, but how was it for you?
The political answer would be there. You know, they're all awesome and great, and for the most part, that's true. I mean, but people are people. Every organization, every side of things, politics, going to have your good apples and your bad apples. I've managed to identify those that I think I should stay away from, I think, and have had a very smooth sailing time, I think, so far. Now I hope I didn't just jinx that, but we'll see.
Okay. Well, give us some names and we'll we won't tell anybody.
Honestly, I've gotten in trouble once or twice by having good intentions, trying to help people out, I guess. It's just weird. The things that people will get upset about when you're trying to do good things.
Well, that's true. That's a hard lesson.
Well, I'm also socially awkward, so I'm sure it's the way I present that it probably throws people off. But my intentions are, like, I like to help new writers. I like to do things for people. And I'm saying it here on your show that anybody that in the community that wants help, I'm happy to help. I don't know if that somehow comes off wrong, but I guess it has one or two times in the past.
Yeah. Well, you know, you do the best you can. That's all you can do. Now, you came into writing kind of off a career. So you were working in the legal profession, let's say, and you left that to become a writer. And after you got broke, you went back to work, but you still write. What's your thought on writing in the writing world?
It's like everything else in that, you know, hard work can get you so far. Connections can get you farther. Other skills like marketing, publicity, branding yourself will get you even farther. And my naivety back when I was in my 20s would be like, oh, hard work was the only thing that mattered. And, you know, I've learned since. So we'll see how things go now. But yeah, I'm still involved with law. I do some consulting on the side, and I do have a day job as well as writing. So I do a lot of things. I have my, I'll put it, I have my pokers in a lot of fires.
My kind of guy here.
I have a lot of pokers, apparently.
Even better. Got to get some pictures here. You know, the audience is going to want to see that.
Well, I never made that mistake and sent him a picture like that.
Oh, come on. You only live once, you know. Have fun. Okay, so what do you hope to get out of the writing experience? Like, is it, like when you're setting out to do books and writing stories and stuff, do you have kind of a purpose? Or are you just kind of doing it at will and it doesn't matter what happens?
It keeps evolving. I mean, as you get better and build your audience, I mean, it was first, I just wanted to see if I was good enough to be published. And then it was, well, if even a few handful, handful of people find meaning in what I've written or find enjoyment in it, I'd be happy. But, you know, I'm not going to lie and say I wouldn't want to make films out of my books or, you know, be the next J.K. Rowling or whoever. Of course I would. I think anyone that tells you otherwise is full of
shit. Oh, my.
What was your favorite story you've ever written? If someone had never read you before, they've never heard of you, which is really hard for me to believe that they hadn't heard of Jason Perlman.
Yeah.
So they've never heard of you, and you're at a book signing, and someone says, "What should I read that captures you the best in your mind?" What would you tell them to read?
I was asked that question probably 10 times at the convention I just did last weekend. And I don't have an answer for it because I write, I write so diversely, and with so many different genres and point of views and styles and voices, that it's hard to say that. I'd say the one I had the most fun writing was my novel They Feed. It's because it's a fast paced action horror, 80s style, campy. It's just a lot of fun. So. And I could tell I had fun with it because I wrote it fast. It didn't take me years and years to write. It only took me, I think, 5 or 6 months to finish it. So, well, first draft.
So what makes a good story for you then? Like when you're reading a book or a short story or whatever you're reading, what is it that keeps you interested? And what is it, do you think, that at the end of it you go, wow, that was great? What things do you look for?
So if you're watching like Law and Order or some crime show, and you can usually pick out the formula that the story's going to take, or and it probably pick who the killer is or the criminal is in within the first 5 minutes, assuming they presented the person in that time frame. What I like when I'm reading a story is to look for that formula, and if they trick me, then I enjoy it. But it's rare that I see something original or I'm fooled. If I'm fooled because they gave me no basis whatsoever to make that conclusion, then that's a different story. That means they just hit the ball on me and are coming out of left field with their ending. Yeah, it's a surprise because it doesn't make any sense. But if they can.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable.
That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Make me miss the breadcrumbs that they've laid and tell me a compelling story, then that is what I get excited about. What I'll review and post comments on and push. I don't have any like bias. Well, I'm sure I have biases, but what I love and promote is 100% what I love and promote.
And when you're writing your characters, what's that process like for you? Like, do you have characters that you absolutely love to write, and even though maybe you've written their story and it's done, you still think about that character?
Yes. The ones I love to write are villains, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Well, unless they're disgusting villains. Like, I had a stepfather that was abusing one of the main characters, and he was tough to get into his skin for as long as I did, because I am like the method actor of writing, I would say. I try to get into the character, fully immerse into the characters, so that I can write them as if I think that's what helps me make them seem real or feel real to the reader. And being in that headspace too long is kind of creepy and gross, but the villains that are delightfully nasty that you almost want to root for, especially if they're killing somebody that's, you know, not too likable in his own right or her own right. Yeah, I enjoy those the most. But then I have a novel called Unbalanced, where the main character suffers from some mental illness, and he's very uncomfortable. And he's so uncomfortable because he's pretty much me. And that's a tough character to be.
Do you have an internal monologue? Can you hear your characters? Is that how you create your character's dialogue, or is there some other way that you do it?
Absolutely. I hear every one of them. There's one author that I enjoy. His name is Rob Smales. When I've gone to readings, I've seen him read, and he's just fantastic. He gives voice to the characters. He's just a fan. I cannot. Obviously, listening to me now, you probably already want to put a gun to your head. But he's just a fantastic reader. When I read them in my head, I read like that. So everybody's has a voice. Everybody, and I'm probably borrowing subconsciously from actors or people that I know, but they're all fully fleshed out people in my head, and my goal is to make sure they're fully fleshed out on paper as well.
But when you say you're the method writer, then that means you dress up like your characters, and then they're killers, you go out and kill people and all that too? Like, you just...
No, I just use math.
So... There you go. That works too, right?
Hey. Come up with some really good ideas.
Yeah. Do they let you drive or no?
My handlers don't always let me drive, no.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. So do your characters take control of the story sometimes?
Oh, yeah. I always, so that, you know, you've probably heard phrases plotter and pantser.
Yeah.
I'm like a part-time plotter, I guess. I have an ending usually, and I have a beginning, and I would probably outline the first three chapters where I want to go, but characters take over scenes, things, they do things that I didn't expect until I write it down on paper, and the whole story changes from there.
Strange. Has there ever been a story that you have been unable to finish?
Yes, but only because it was, so when I first tried to write a novel, it was fantasy. I learned very quickly I cannot write fantasy. inventing, so the imagination it takes to invent races of creatures with their own dialects and or even languages, it amazes me that people like Patrick Rothfuss, George R. R. Martin can conceive. Well, George R. R. Martin's, you know, Game of Thrones, A Song of Fire and Ice, was pretty based in reality. Well, okay, there were dragons. Besides the dragons and some zombies, All right, I stand corrected. But there were a lot of it was mostly humans and normal, but someone like James Rollins, who writes Amazonia and novels, thrillers like that have like these really fantastical elements. It's just amazing what they can do. And I don't have that skill. I fully concede I don't, unless I want to try to take 30 years to write it.
Oh, I was going to say take 30 years of math. And...
Yeah, well, okay, I could do it.
You'd be in a fantasy then. What would you do that people wouldn't expect from you?
Well, I've been toying with the idea of writing a romance because I just want to see if I could. But yeah, nobody would expect that from me.
Well, just use a different name. That's all. Just don't put it under your writer name, and then see what happens that way.
Yeah, I'm not sure I could do it though.
Well, what is it? What do you think that would be difficult in a romance then that you wouldn't be able to do?
I could probably do the cheesy, Fabio covered type romance novel, but I mean a good one with where it didn't lean towards melodrama or cheese. I don't know. I don't think that I'm unromantic as a person. Well, others might say so, but I can feel those things that I would need to feel to put in a story, but I just don't know if I could craft. I like action. I like plot things that keep you excited, and I just don't know if I could do it. But I'll let you know.
Well, it's a different feel, right, to it. So it's hard to put a lot of action in romance without it getting.
I don't know if I could do what you do either with the true crime, because then it's too real.
Just whether it's in your mind or whether it's in the physical world, it's the same, really. The advantage of true crime is that you kind of don't have to do a lot of imagining of what a person is doing or what they're like or what they, what happens. You kind of know what happens. It's more about the research and finding the information. So I don't know. It's okay. You have to have a hard nose, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it would be more like Dragnet. If I'm misquoting Just the Facts, Ma'am, I think it was. I don't think I'd put like my own. I'd feel free to put my own opinions or emotion into it.
Yeah, and that's okay in a sense. We just talk to an author like that, and I know I don't in some cases because sometimes it's not warranted. There's not a right time and place for you to be giving an opinion. You know what I mean? Sometimes you can get your opinion out by what some of the people say that you talk to, interviewing someone in prison and when they start telling you why they did something or how they did what they did, sometimes that says it all. I don't have to give an opinion. Just me writing that makes people kind of go, wow, this person's a nut, And I don't have to elaborate.
Have you read Jack Ketchum's The Girl Next Door?
No.
I turned the interview around on you. You like that, huh?
Yeah, there you go. Go for it, man. Get the whip out. Yeah.
It's just this brutal story based on true crime about what I think there were neighbors did to a young girl. Awful story. Awful story, but so powerful and well written. And he, like, you read that story and you're just floored afterwards and gutted. And how he could do that with so much tact and taste, my hat's off. So I think that would be the same for most true crime writers. If they can pull it off with tact and taste and class, then I don't know if I could.
Yeah, well, I think you could if you've got a heart, and it sounds like you do. I mean, you're kind of, all over the place, but I think that you generally care, and I think that's all it is. When you read back something and you're not sure, a lot of times you can attach it to how would I feel if this was my brother, sister, daughter, friend. You know what I mean? Like you attach it to yourself, and if you're a reasonable person, then you kind of go, well, yeah, I should do it this way or do it that way. And there are writers that don't, believe me. There are some that are savages out there.
Yes, I'd say you're making the assumption I'm a reasonable person.
Well, reasonable when you're not on meth.
Oh, meth is just one of many drugs that we
Yeah. You can tell. You've got a sincere voice that comes out. So I think it's just choosing. You know what I mean? Because you yourself, when you say that with the tact and the class and all that, that means you know kind of what's right and what would be wrong in that particular case. And that's the way you go when you're doing it. And if you have that, so you'd be fine. So get on the true crime. Next story.
Well, I'd say one of my novels, A Life Removed, is very far removed from the satanic panic, but it takes place in Fall River, where I grew up, actually. So I don't know if you've done anything with the satanic panic, but it was something that I wouldn't say I lived through, but I lived adjacent to.
No, I didn't do anything writing wise other than I interviewed the head of the church, Church of Satan, and the traditional Church of Satan, and the there's the third one, the Luciferian. So I talked in great lengths to quite a few of them, but I don't, I haven't, you know, Satanic Panic was just more, you know, Geraldo Rivera and the rest of the silliness that went on. And, you know, people buy into it. It's what amazes me is more about people's reactions, not so much what was said, but how people react to things, just like they do today and just like they did with the pandemic and anything. And that's probably something you're aware of, is how people react to your stories. So does that ever surprise you?
Talking about that A Life Removed, I got a one-star review, and I finally get to say this. I don't usually talk about reviews, and I never bash a review, obviously. But it said, if you like this novel, you are sick. I'm like, oh, that's actually a good soundbite. I don't think they meant it as positively as I took it, but that's fine.
You know, and personally, I'm not really a fan of a lot of the reviews sort of systems, but you got to take it as it comes, right? In a way, that is a good review, in a sense.
Yeah, I'd say when I first started, I mean, I've been writing for 2 decades now, and it's like I started publishing under this name in 2012 or so. So, I used to monitor the reviews and never responded to them or anything, but and it hurt when you got a bad one. Now it's, you get a thick skin after a certain amount of time, and it's just, oh well, you know, hopefully you'll win them over on the next one.
Yeah. I think a lot of times the review, isn't it sort of more about, where they're at and where they're coming from. I mean, when you try to tell a story to someone that doesn't live in the same sort of circumstance that you live in, you might be totally alien to them, and what you write might be totally off to them. So a lot of times it's really kind of their circumstance.
Right. But if you stick to the universals, I mean, if you hear the phrase love is love, and I mean, everybody knows, but most people have felt the full range of human emotions and the full spectrum. But, you know, obviously everybody's different, has different degrees of how they feel about things, but they all know what it feels like to be, say, an outsider, or even if they're the most popular person in the world, they've at one time felt like an outsider. Or felt inadequate, or just like, and if you know how to write well, and you know how to convey that emotion to, I think, anyone, regardless of their background or their personal beliefs.
Right, right. It's like being lonely in a crowded room kind of idea. But I think what I'm saying is that, you know, a person might read something and it might be too close to real for them. It might hurt too much, and therefore you're getting a one star.
I won't try to decipher their thought. I mean, it could be that I'm well aware that my stories will not work for everybody. So I'm okay with the one stars and the five stars and anybody in between.
That's right. Well, I hunt down my one stars and I make sure they're eliminated. There was the phrase, unalived. We eliminate them, you know. We'll not want them.
I got enough other stress in my life to not be worried about those people. Those folks.
Yeah. It's kind of the thing not to worry about, really. Just look at the big picture. So, listen, people, where can they find you? Like, are you hanging out in bars? Are you in...
I'm usually hiding under rocks or...
Hiding under rocks, yeah, maybe in a bridge?
Yeah. I'm all over social media. And well, I have my Facebook page, author page, authorjasonparent.com, Twitter, Instagram. Haven't done the TikTok thing yet, but everybody's telling me I should.
I'd be amused. Get on there.
I'll do one of those little jump videos, and all of a sudden I'm naked. There you go.
See, now there. I'm on it. Get on this right now.
I'll sell one book.
I'll buy one of these. And I'll give you a good rating. Oh, it's terrible. And now, do you have a website?
Yeah, authorjasonparent.com.
Perfect.
Probably pretentious that I put the author in, but I set it up when I first started, so.
Well, actually, no, it's in a way, it's a good idea because so many people have websites and names up, and it's kind of good in a sense because if there's other Jason Parents out there, then you'll be more distinguished because you're a writer, author, Jason Parent, rather than just Jason.
There are definitely a lot of Jasons with parents out there. So
a lot of parents that have Jasons.
Yeah.
So what's next for you? So this book's out now and you're promoting it and stuff. What can we expect from the Jason next?
Well, I'm working on a script, as I mentioned, and we already have a plan to pitch it to a fairly decent horror studio. I don't know how much I can say, but that's in progress. Other than that, writing-wise, it's been tough lately. I'm like, I have a collection coming out in September down in the deep, dark places that you can make a joke about, I'm sure. and then another collection of Halloween stories coming out next year. Halloween is, and I grew up loving Halloween. And I think it was David on one of your other things the author you guys had on, who wrote the mystery, he has a whole mystery series. He said something about, dressing up and cosplay, I think. But yes, I kinda enjoy that myself. So, I've always loved Halloween. I think that shows in my Halloween stories. It's just the love and the spirit and the kind of mischief that goes with that night comes out in my Halloween stories. So I have high hopes for that collection, as I do think it is my best writing.
Well, there you have it. Now you have an answer for that other question.
Oh, yeah, once it comes out.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what you tell people, it's coming. How do you like writing a script? Is it quite a bit harder than writing normal books, but just books?
Harder? No, but definitely different. I think dialogue is one of my strengths. So that part is obviously very important in the script, as it is in your novel. The camera directions are what's different, really. Like, we see fog rolling in from, you know, across the otherwise empty valley or something. I don't know. I'm making this up as I go along, but it's really not that much than describing a setting. It's just the way you do it. And I mean, I didn't know what the word super meant for in a script writing. That just means we see if essentially, but, and I'm probably getting that wrong and now I'm going to get my script canceled.
You say that, you know, dialogue's a strong point. What do you think's, what's the important thing about a dialogue? When you write dialogue, do you say it out loud or
yes,
rerun it through your head? Do you want, because it has to be something someone would really say, right?
Right. To quote King, and I'm pretty sure I'm quoting him right, but, or paraphrase King then, he said, don't say he defecated, say he took a poop. I had to change the last word.
Right.
But I mean, yeah, I keep reading when I edit other people's works, it says he departed or something. To say he left. Why are you using, or instead of, a lot of authors like to put, instead of he said, they put he communicated or he exclaimed or he whatever.
Yeah.
It's no.
Yeah.
Stop that.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean, you know, but you know, times I think in a writer's mind, they're probably thinking, that's something you do when you're new, usually at the beginning, because you don't want to use the same words too many times, right? You think about all those weird things.
Use action tags then, you know?
Yeah. But, you know, at first, it's overwhelming the very first time you write something that, you know, it can be.
True.
That's great. So now we know. Jason dresses up like his characters. He pretends to be them.
Oh, I'll send you a picture you'll like.
Oh, wonderful.
As long as you're not going to post it.
I don't post pictures, but I like them. Well, Jason, we appreciate you being here, and we'll put everything up on our website. People will be able to find you real easily. So hopefully your new book does well, and it sure looks very interesting. So it's an unholy Triquirtia, Celtic Fairy Tales, Dark Tide Mysteries and Thrillers, Book 9. And, of course, Jason Parents, one of the writers and our guests. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's been interesting.
Thanks, Jason.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.